Several proposed pieces of legislation are geared toward changing the makeup of the Indiana State Board of Education. Legislators are attempting to reduce the number of board members and remove the requirement that the state superintendent automatically serves as the board's chair. Some people claim this is a partisan effort to strip Superintendent Glenda Ritz, the only Democrat elected to a statewide office, of many of her powers. I'm Bob Zaltzberg, and today on Noon Edition, we will speak with guests about what this legislation would change the structure of education in the state. Is it necessary change or a power play by the Republican majority? We invite you to join the conversation after this hour's news. Production support comes from Smithville Communications, serving Southern Indiana with fiber gigabit internet and digital IPTV. More information at smithville.net.
And from School of Public Health Bloomington, Public Health Reimagined, addressing 21st century health challenges with a multidisciplinary approach to disease prevention, health promotion, and enhancing quality of life. publichealth.indiana.edu.
Welcome to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Zaltzberg, editor of the Herald Times, along with co-host Rachel Morello from State Impact Indiana. The state superintendent of schools has automatically been the chair of the state school board for 100 years, but that could change if proposed legislation passes to allow the state board to elect one of its members to serve as chair. Today on Noon Edition, we'll discuss what this means for current Superintendent Glenda Ritz. Some say this is a partisan effort to strip Ritz, the only Democrat elected to statewide office, of some of her powers. Others say that it's just an effort to try to make the board run in a more functional manner. We have three guests with us today. Kathy Fuentes-Rohr is here. She's the head of the Indiana Coalition for Public Education of Monroe County and Southern Indiana and a Bloomington mom. And Steve Hennefeld is here. He is a longtime education blogger. He worked for the Herald Times for many years covering education. And Steve is just basically very knowledgeable about all going on at the State House today. And also, we will be joined soon by John Barnes. He's the Director of Legislative Affairs for the Indiana Department of Education. You can join the conversation by giving us a call at 855-0811 in Bloomington or 1-877-285-9348 outside of the Bloomington calling area. You can also join the live chat at wfiu.org/noonedition, and you can follow us on Twitter at Noon Edition. So before we get started, I want to say this is actually a much broader show than even that issue. It's become the biggest issue in education. I mean, it is a huge issue in education, but part of it has been playing out this week with the ISTEP tests and whether they're too long, and if they are too long, as they seem to be, whose fault that is. And some people are blaming Glenda Ritz for it. Others are blaming other people. So, Rachel, it's been, you're covering education. It's been kind of a wild time.
Yeah, it's been pretty busy this week. And you gave a good history, Bob, but I just want to mention, too, this one item of legislation that's already made its way through the House, and that's a bill that would allow the board to elect a chair from within its ranks beginning this coming July. Like you said, the superintendent has served as the chair automatically. Whoever is elected to that position fills that slot. And this week we talked to House Speaker Brian Bosma, who tends to remain on his podium during discussion on the House floor, but he actually stepped down to offer his comments on this idea. And he told me afterwards why he decided to do that.
I've spent the last 2 years, along with Senator David Long, trying to mediate some of the dysfunction issues between the State Board of Education, the superintendent, the governor's former office of CECI, school advisors, education advisors, and I've been really very quiet about the dysfunction and have tried to bring it to a close and a conclusion in a positive manner. But with the ISTEP testing announcement that ISTEP time was nearly tripling for third through eighth graders here in the next 2 months, it was time to no longer remain silent and indicate this has gone from dysfunctional to detrimental now for students.
So, of course, Bosma's referring to the timetables that were released earlier this month that showed students would need to sit double and in some cases triple, like he said, the amount of time that they had in previous years to complete this spring's I-STEP. So let's talk a little bit about how the State Board and the relations between the board and RITS and her Department of Education are sort of playing into this. Let's go to Steve first.
Well, there's no question that they're bad, and they've been bad for a long time. I guess the question is whether that equals dysfunction and what the answer is to that. I think just a little sort of context and background, Indiana is one of, I believe, 9 states, something like that, where the state superintendent or the chief state school officer is elected. Here, the state board is appointed by the governor. So if you have a governor and a superintendent of opposite political parties, there's potential for conflict over what education policy should be and how it should be carried out. But I think it's also important to point out that Indiana's had that circumstance for a considerable amount of time in the past, including not that long ago when Evan Bay and Frank O'Bannon and Joe Kernan were governor and when Sue Ellen Reed was the superintendent of Republican Democratic governors, and things seemed to work pretty well then. So it's not a guarantee, and other states seem to manage okay. So you know, I think just sort of the combination of the sort of pace of education changes and the polarization around issues of education has made it more difficult, and personalities have made it much more difficult, I would say. You watch the board meetings. I haven't been to any, but I know you have, Rachel, and you watch them online or watch the videos, and it's just really plain that they're having a great deal of difficulty being in the same room with each other.
Yeah. I mean, even today we were just saying we were watching the meeting, and they've got 2 weeks to fix all this I-STEP stuff, and it came to play again, you know, talking about board procedure and how they're getting materials to one another. So it's definitely playing into it.
I think it's interesting to go back to how what this new legislation would do and how it's set up now. I mean, Steve, you know, and Rachel and Kathy, all three, correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, but the governor basically appoints members of the State Board of Education now. So the leader of the Board of Education is somebody who's in the opposite party. And the new legislation would change that and have different people appointing different members, correct, Steve?
Yeah, there are several bills that are in play, and they're changing as they move, which is typical in the legislature. I think it's Senate Bill 1 that's moving that would, you know, the thing that's gotten a lot of attention is that these most of these bills would remove the requirement from statute that the state superintendent serve as chair of the State Board of Education, so presumably the board would elect someone other than Glenda Ritz as chair. But they also changed the makeup of the board. They at some point remove or change or weaken the requirement that the board include members of more than one political party. They, at least I think as amended, Senate Bill 1 gives more appointments to the Speaker of the House and the President Pro Tem of the Senate. They remove the requirement for geographical distribution of board members, which has been there for a long time, that there be a representative from each congressional district. So a lot of changes going on in addition to that. And then there's other legislation that is just being looked at. I'm not sure how it's doing, that would kind of shift some duties and responsibilities from the Department of Education, the administrative body headed by Glenda Ritz, to the State Board of Education, which would have the authority to hire staff to carry out programs and do that sort of thing as well.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, I want to bring you in because, you know, Kathy Fuentes-Rohr, her name appears in our paper a lot in education stories. And, you know, she is very active and very involved, and she has students in the school. So, you know, why are you so passionate about this, and how did you get so active?
Well, I have 4 kids, like you said, and one is at college now, but I have 2 in high school and one that's only 10 in 4th grade. So he took that battery of testing last year in the iRead 3, where his teacher didn't have any say over whether or not he went to 4th grade, only that test that the state decided had that say. And I feel strongly about public education because I feel strongly that it's the cornerstone of our democracy. And I think that the problem that we have on the state board is not dissent. I mean, it's not dysfunction, it's dissent. And they don't want dissent. They want complete railroading through like they had. And I think I represent a lot of parents and a lot of citizens in the state who saw Glenda Ritz's campaign and were saying, whoa, back. There's an ALEC agenda, American Legislative Exchange Council, which is named after us. There's a whole Indiana education reform plan named after us. And so this all was falling into play pretty smoothly for them. They had their supermajority, but enough people were unhappy with what was happening to schools and decided to push back and elected Glenda Ritz.
Mm-hmm. I think it's worth going back in history a little bit, because Tony Bennett was the superintendent of public instruction, and everything was sort of going along smoothly with all the reforms, if I can use that word, in Indiana with the legislature. And then Glenda Ritz got about 53% of the vote. Mike mm-hmm. Pence got about 52% of the vote, I think, or less than that, perhaps.
There were three candidates, but
that's
so,
right, 40,
so less percentage
right.
But he got fewer votes than she did.
Right. And so that set up this potential conflict, but the voter set it up because the voter said, we are going to elect Glenda Ritz, the Democrat, over the guy who for the last 4 years has been running policy on education. So there's bound to be some kind of conflict.
Oh, absolutely.
And arguably the voters also elected Governor Pence, mm-hmm. Although right. that campaign was not strongly about education. They also have elected Republican supermajorities in both the House and Senate, although most of them have not campaigned on education issues for the most part, although there were some education issues raised in the last election, and also arguably those numbers reflect the way districts are drawn to a certain extent, not necessarily the will of the voters. But in some ways, one could argue that we're getting in Indianapolis the same kind of divided government that we're getting in Washington, D.C., and that we as voters have asked for.
Mm-hmm. All right. We have a phone call already. So Chris from Ellettsville is on the line. Chris, go ahead.
Hey. I have a cold, so excuse me. I'll try to speak clearly. I think, I get kind of fiery on this topic. I have a couple of children of mine are in school and family members that are teachers. And I think it's kind of odd how, Glenda Ritz was voted in by a huge, seemed like a vast majority. And I don't understand why it's sort of a one-sided argument on the news media that somehow she's causing these problems that are interrupting children's education when, I believe she was an educator herself, and I think she has a better interest of children at heart than, administrators. I just find it funny that when Tony Bennett was elected, he was elected, and I guess he went along with, whatever the agenda was, and he was lauded as a great guy, but, look at his record as he leaves office. And then why is it if you have someone who has been voted in, who changed their political party to be voted in, suddenly, just like Ms. Fuente said, she's not playing along, and so it seems as though there's a kind of a witch hunt at work to kind of strip her of powers and to make it look like that she's the problem. And I kind of think that echoes exactly the same thing that is going on with teachers, that somehow teachers who are the last link in the chain of education are being, demonized so often as the ones who are letting our children down, when for the longest time, teachers have had to, take their orders, as it were, from administrators and legislatures. I don't understand how they come out looking as bad as they do, and yet there's no real, administrators and legislators come out, looking clean. I just don't get that. And I think most people that don't have a vested interest in education will just take basically news at face value. And I think sometimes the news can be, swayed by certain agendas. And, I'll just leave it at that.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. I want to address two or three things out of Chris's call. One is, and you know, any of you can answer this, but you know, we're talking about how Glenda Ritz isn't playing along. So how isn't she playing along? What is it she's doing that's bothering that you think that people would think that this is all a vendetta to get her? Rachel?
I'm going to throw something excuse me, in there that actually I was talking about with Brian Bosma earlier this week, too, and that is who has policymaking authority, mm-hmm. you know, because, I mean, you've got the governor, you've got the General Assembly, you've got the superintendent who heads the Department of Education, and then you have the State Board. That's five separate entities. And who has which responsibility is obviously an issue. And mm-hmm. I think they're all questioning it, too. Nobody really knows what falls to who, and that's sort of part of the a big part of the problem.
I'd take that a step further and say a really important question is what is policy and what is administration? What is policy? What is programs? You know, the State Board of Education certainly has considerable policy setting and policy making authority, goal setting authority. But the statute, if you look at it, is actually a little bit, the state code is actually somewhat confusing and contradictory. It gives some responsibilities to the State Board of Education. It gives many responsibilities to the Indiana Department of Education. The Indiana Department of Education is the state education agency, which is something that we deal with under federal law and federal programs. So you would think that you know, I would tend to draw parallels to local school corporations, where the school board sets policy, hires the superintendent, and gets out of the way, basically, and lets the superintendent make or delegate decisions. But it's very different at the state level, and part of that is a function, I'd say, of how the laws are written, what the legislature has chosen to do, and part of it is a function of the sort of relative aggressiveness of board members and how they see their responsibility and their role in carrying out and creating creating policy and actually creating programs and being very involved in signing off on a lot of actions.
I would say that I've been watching it for a long time since she was elected, and she was very, you know, in a perfect world, they would have sat down and said, okay, clearly you have this agenda. This is polar opposite of what ours is. But the people of Indiana are saying, whoa, back. And we're saying we want more time on learning and teaching and less time on testing. And all the many things that she ran on is clearly the reason why she ran and why she won. But I watched very early on when she had her staff put together a proposal to try to make the iRead 3 more humane. And I watched that meeting, and I watched them not even allow her to bring the proposal to the board. Like, it was back when she was, from my perspective, starting off reaching across the aisle, saying, okay, here's something. And the way that they treated her as if she were a child, I have to say that there is a lot of sexism involved in this, and that's underlying a lot of it. I've never seen anybody point to somebody and talk to people the way that some of those men on that board have talked to her. So I think it has spiraled in many ways. But if you think about it from a woman's perspective, she's in that position. If she acts very accommodating, she's not a strong leader. If she acts strong, she's hysterical. So you're in a tough position as a woman in that position.
Mm-hmm. All right. Our phone numbers today, 855, as always, 855-0811 in Bloomington, 1-877-285-9348 outside the Bloomington calling area. You can also join a live chat at wfiu.org/noonedition. And you could follow us on Twitter at noonedition. So, Steve, you know, we've followed the legislature for a long time, and there are lots of ways that I think there's a debate, maybe a discussion to be had on whether this position should be elected or appointed. And do you think that will be – come up in the future?
Yeah, I think it will. It's come up before. People have raised the issue of whether we should have if the state superintendent should be appointed by the governor or appointed by the board. Some states, the board members are elected and they appoint the state superintendent, so you still have potential for conflict in that situation. The Indiana Chamber of Commerce said this session that they wanted an appointed board member to be one of their priorities. The legislature has not moved that. I think realizing that politically it would look very bad to essentially remove the only Democratic state office holder from office during her term of office. They're sort of
doing it anyway.
I'll let other people comment how that's playing out. But yeah, I think it's something that people have talked about for a long time. The Center for Evaluation Education Policy at IU did a policy brief back in, 2005 or something like that, looked at it. And there's been support on both sides of the political aisle for making the position appointed or changing the governance situation. But there's sort of never a right time to do it because you're always in the midst of situations like these.
Right. Well, I want to welcome John Barnes to the program. John.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. John is the Director of Legislative Affairs for the Indiana Department of Education. Have you had a busy morning?
Yeah. It's been just a little bit hectic.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
But glad to be here.
So what's the latest?
Well, the latest is, I think that, we're figuring out a way to adjust the length of the testing. There's a whole dialogue that goes with that. But the reason why this has been such a challenging week, I think, is that starting way back on Monday, there's been an awful lot of misinformation out there. And I guess I would, to summarize, just say in August, CTB McGraw-Hill presented to the State Board of Education a slideshow that told them that there were going to be twice as many questions. And then in January, they told us that the window and the way they wanted to try to approach this because of the test's rigor would be larger. This idea that it's a bombshell, it's a surprise, just doesn't pass the smell test at all. People have been aware of that. And quite honestly, if the governor and the appointed members of the board haven't been aware of that, I'm worried about things, especially at a time when they're trying to give the state board more influence. It's like, wait a minute, they don't seem to be able to pay attention as it is.
Right. Okay, we're going to take one phone call before we go to our break. So John from Bloomington is on the line. John?
Following up on some other phoned-in questions, I'd be interested to hear more about the makeup of the appointees to the state board. With respect to, for example, the gender balance, what kinds of educational expertise, if any, that individual members have, and any potential for conflict of interest, not just the obvious kind in terms of one's own income and family income, but cronyism of the aisle scratch your back, you scratch mine kind. Thank you.
All right, John, thanks. Who wants to take that?
I wouldn't mind just answering the first part of that question since Claire and I, my partner at State Impact, we both go to those meetings. So there are a number of teachers who make up, aside from Glenda Ritz, we're just talking about the other appointed board members. I think they've got three or four teachers, a couple of principals. There are some business members of the business community. There are three women aside from Glenda Ritz. The rest are men. I think that was everything he had asked, but I know I saw you both raise.
Well, I was going to say I would add in. To me, this is a perfect time to address the issue of the composition of the board, and we truly welcome that because out of the 10 members, you're right. There's supposed to be a certain number of educators, and as you said, I believe currently it's four. And there are actually more than that on the board with education backgrounds. But at the same time, politically, the idea is that it's supposed to be six Republicans and four Democrats. And the problem is defining who's a Republican and who's a Democrat is very, very difficult. There are other ways we could do this. If we truly want to say these people are Republicans, these people are Democrats, there would be other ways to do that, including giving the minority party a chance to make some appointments. That way we would be clear.
And that six and four is based on the governor who's in office?
He appoints all of them, yes.
So, if it was a Democratic governor, it would be six Democrats and four Republicans?
No more than six of the appointed members can be from either political party.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, we're going to have to take a short break. I want to give our phone numbers again, though. We're talking about Indiana's public education system and a lot of things going through the legislature, which are, I'd say, explosive at this moment. So if you want to give us a call, 855-0811 in Bloomington or 1-877-285-9348. Outside of the Bloomington area, you can also join a live chat at wfiu.org/noonedition or follow us on Twitter @noonedition. We'll be right back.